DW, Living Planet, with Sam Baker.
Hello and welcome to Living Planet. Today we're exploring areas of our lives that climate change is having an impact on, be it work, politics, or even our leisure activities. We'll venture to the Austrian Alps to hear about the heightened risk of avalanches as glacial melting speeds up.
Also, mir fällt das schon auf, dass das immer schneller geht am Anfang.
I've noticed that it's happening faster and faster. In the early days, we saw only a slight retreat if we looked closely enough at our reference point.
Later, we'll visit Berlin's famous club scene, where some venues are trying to do their part for the planet.
The creative potential that is in the scene, it can lead to really good new ideas to tackle environmental issues.
And in Morocco, farmers and other businesses that depend on agriculture are looking for ways to insure against climate risk.
Il existe déjà au Maroc donc des assurances pour les petits agriculteurs.
Insurance for small farmers already exists in Morocco. Insurance companies offer schemes that are subsidized by the state. So that's not our focus. What we're more interested in is an insurance solution that encompasses the entire value chain.
But first, France has been gripped by rolling protests in recent months. Not just by the so-called Gilets jaunes, or yellow vests, who demand economic justice, but also by citizens calling on the French government to step up the fight against climate change. It's a hard lesson for French President Emmanuel Macron, and it mirrors a broader green uprising across Europe and the U.S. French citizens are fed up with the inaction on the part of their government, and they're taking to the streets to show it. Lisa Bryant has this story from Paris.
Il y a besoin d'action et il y a un besoin urgent d'action. Et oui, nous devons être fiers.
School teacher François Gilles has become a veteran of the French streets. He's a member of the Gilets jaunes, or yellow vest protest movement, that has steamrolled across the country. But on a recent Sunday, Gilles added a new color and cause to his demands, joining a green climate rally in Paris on a rainy afternoon.
I think the fight against climate change in France is similar to demands made by yellow vest protesters, for the government to take the population's decisions into account.
There's a spirit of revolt in France these days, not just because of yellow vest demonstrations over economic grievances that are now in their third month, but also because of growing citizen alarm over climate change that is gathering steam across Europe, and the sense that European governments are not doing enough.
You have so many young generation today mobilized because they say that they are the last generation to be able to save our future, to save our planet.
That's Neil Makarov, EU policy advisor for NGO Climate Action Network France.
And today climate is one of the main concerns in France for the French people. In many opinion polls you can see that it's a raising topic.
Thousands of French joined countrywide climate protests in late January, one of several here in recent months, with more in the pipeline. Paris protester Véronique Veil is promoting veganism as one solution.
I think for me it's hard to care about the environment if you're not vegan, because it's the number one cause of deforestation, oceans dead zone, green gas emissions.
The rallies are part of spreading grassroots action across Europe that has seen school children on strike and activists occupying streets and government buildings to draw attention to what they consider a climate crisis. It's a movement, some analysts say, that will also help shape European Parliament elections in May, and one French President Emmanuel Macron and his party are closely tracking. Manuel Lafont-Trapnouille is head of the Paris office of the European Council on Foreign Relations.
Macron's team has looked at elections, recent elections throughout Europe, and has seen that in most cases, the Green forces, the Green Party, the pro-environment forces, have made a big success, or could make a big have a big successes in the next European election.
So One Planet Summit, c'est pour moi le début d'une nouvelle génération.
The climate rallies are a reality check for Macron in other ways. The French president has coasted on his climate credentials. He's promised to make our planet great again and invited American climate scientists to France after the Trump administration announced it was pulling out of the Paris Climate Pact. But environmentalists like Marie Toussaint say there's a huge gap between Macron's rhetoric and reality.
They want France to be one of the climate leaders in the world, but they actually don't do anything inside of their territory. In France, what we see is that we are late on all our climate policy.
Toussaint co-sponsored an online petition that threatens to sue the French government for not doing enough to fight climate change. So far, it's gathered a record 2 million signatures and counting. The petition has a precedent. A similar one in the Netherlands forced the Dutch government to increase emissions cuts. In some ways, France's green and yellow protest movements could not be more different. Yellow vest demonstrations erupted over anger at a fuel tax hike, meant partly to finance climate measures. The government is worried about the end of the world, yellow vest said. We're worried about the end of the month. Some observers believe it shows people are not willing to pay the price for a healthier planet.
J'ai entendu du...
But that's not the sentiment in the Paris suburb of Montreuil, where a group of yellow vests hands out hot coffee and cookies to passers-by.
It seems to me climate is even more in danger than French democracy.
That's yellow vest member Monique Pedron, who's also joining climate protests. Ordinary people are willing to make sacrifices for the planet, she says, but bigger, richer polluters must do the same.
Déjà que l'essence est terriblement taxée.
Fuel is already overtaxed, and the increase was absolutely not going to pay for climate. That was money for the government's pockets, and only a bit for the climate.
Many at the Paris rally agree the two movements are on the same page. Climate justice and social justice go hand in hand, this speaker said. Maybe, but not always. The yellow vests are extremely diverse. Some appear to embrace populist slogans pitched by the far-right National Rally Party, which has a minimalist green agenda and is surging in the polls. Surveys also show a new yellow vest party has more support right now than France's Greens party. But as a campaign for European Parliament elections heats up, climate activists here plan to make sure their voices are heard. Lisa Bryant, DW, Paris.
While political protests may be one effort to mitigate the impacts of climate change, others are planning ahead for a world where more intense droughts and flooding are a reality every year. In the rural Moroccan region of Sousmassa, farmers are feeling the impact of extreme weather. One local project has introduced the idea of an insurance scheme to protect those whose livelihoods depend on agriculture. But will it work? Mabel Gunlach spoke with project coordinators and local businesses to find out more. This piece is narrated by Ruby Russell.
In the rural region of Sousmassa in Morocco, farmers bring produce like oranges and other citrus fruits to the main open-air market. Here, agriculture is the source of income. But extreme weather, from drought to flooding, is becoming an increasingly frequent problem. And it's not just farmers who are affected. From growing and harvesting produce to packaging and transporting it, the effects of climate change are felt by workers throughout the local economy. But what if there was a way to protect against the economic impacts of climate change? Maxime Souvenier of the Munich Climate Insurance Initiative coordinates a project looking for ways to insure against climate risk.
Il existe déjà au Maroc donc des assurances pour les petits agriculteurs.
Insurance for small farmers already exists in Morocco. Insurance companies offer schemes that are subsidized by the state. So that's not our focus. What we're more interested in is an insurance solution that encompasses the entire value chain.
Ce qui nous intéresse plus nous, c'est l'approche de la chaîne de valeur.
Ideally, everyone involved in the agriculture industry could be insured against natural disaster, whether they are directly or indirectly affected when extreme weather hits. But how has the agricultural economy in this area been hit by climate change? In Tarragona, the provincial capital, local authorities are struggling to cope with the effects of extreme weather. Heavy rain and ravaging floods jeopardize the whole region, eroding riverbanks and submerging croplands. Roads and bridges are especially vulnerable, with some being entirely wiped out by muddy floodwaters. The problem is there's just not enough money to tackle the problem. Terradont's mayor, Ismail El Hariri.
We compiled a report to see how much the bridges and protective measures for the town would cost. It turns out to be just over 800,000 euros. The city would contribute 20% of that, the Interior Ministry 30%. That means we need to find someone to put up the remaining 50%.
If the authorities can't afford to repair collapsed bridges, the transport of fresh fruit and vegetables will be interrupted. Here's the project coordinator Maxime Souvenier again.
If a bridge is damaged here in Taroudant, it could impair production and delivery to the businesses in the town of Aït Melloul. That affects the entire value chain. Just one damaged bridge in Taroudant means the whole region is affected.
In the Aït Melloul business park, businesses prepare fresh fruit and vegetables from the region, funneling them through conveyor belts into boxes for export. If their suppliers fail to deliver the produce, their businesses suffer. 90% of Morocco's agricultural exports are processed here. A key aspect of the climate insurance scheme being developed by Souvenier is that payouts are determined by weather data. If there's been a certain amount of rainfall, the insurance scheme pays up. Damage incurred doesn't have to be documented. The scheme is geared to 400 businesses in Aït Melloul. Local enterprises are aware of the gravity of the situation. Long periods of high temperatures are bad for orange trees, and flooding can lead to fungal infestations. One local company director, Abdella Radouani of Domaine El Boura, says that climate change has become a bitter reality. If the quality of the produce isn't up to standard, it can't be exported, and the company's modern packaging plant is all for nothing. He adds that while existing insurance schemes are a step in the right direction, they don't go far enough.
There are a lot of factors that aren't covered and a range of bureaucratic hurdles. When there's an insurance claim that can be traced back to climate change, then no one wants to take responsibility. It takes a long time for anything to happen.
More data needs to be gathered before the new climate insurance scheme can be introduced. But farmers and companies are desperately seeking new ways to protect their businesses against extreme weather, which is becoming the new normal here in Morocco.
That report was filed by Mabel Gundlach and voiced by Ruby Russell. Ruby has also done additional reporting about climate insurance. You can find her reporting and other environment news from Deutsche Welle at dw.com/environment.
Your house, my house, any little reason to come around. Your future is in my capable hands, but you have to understand that I don't mean it. All I wanna do is run around to your place and fix a drink and pretend that we are okay. We can hide in the cover of the storm. You're the lightning and I'll soon be gone.
This week, an avalanche killed one French ski patroller and injured four others at the Crans Montana ski station in southern Switzerland. Masses of snow have caused havoc in the Alps this winter, killing at least 15 people across Italy, Austria, France, and Switzerland. Avalanches have blocked roads and cut off towns in the region. Austria's Central Institute for Meteorology and Geodynamics is the oldest measuring station of its kind in the world. New monitoring equipment installed on the region's highest peaks shows glaciers are retreating massively, and the risk of avalanches is continuously increasing as the world warms. Clemens Ferencotta paid a visit to the region. His story is narrated by Irene Quayle.
Alexander Podesser is standing knee-deep in a hillside snowdrift, stabbing at the glistening surface with a shovel to examine the layers beneath. He's head of the Central Institute for Meteorology and Geodynamics in the Austrian state of Styria.
The problem we have now is that we're expecting masses of fresh snow, and the new snow is heavier. It's also getting warmer, and that new snow is settling on top of very loose snow. And so on a steep incline, there's a risk not only that it doesn't stick, but that it could slide down over this soft layer.
A passionate hiker, Podesser has been studying the effects of climate change on the alpine landscape for a long time. A few years ago, his institute installed new measuring equipment at the top of the Dachstein, Upper Austria's highest peak, to take precise readings from the glaciers.
It's the largest glacier in the Eastern Alps, and you can see from year to year how rapidly the glacier is retreating. There were the especially warm years, 2003, 2013, 2015, where the glacier retreated 3 to 4 meters, and that's very clear. There is a ski area up there, and you can see that the pylons are almost clear of snow and ice. Of course, today they have a white cover over them to delay or prevent melting, but the retreat has been massive.
The emergency services use controlled avalanche blasting to protect access roads and towns in danger of being hit by an avalanche. This technique was used here in January this year when winter storms dumped massive amounts of snow in the region. Andreas Buchegger is head of the mountain rescue team in the popular tourist centre Ebensee. He's been monitoring the avalanche situation and the retreat of glaciers in the area for decades.
I've noticed that it's happening faster and faster. In the early days, we saw only a slight retreat if we looked closely enough at our reference point on certain rock formations or ski lift stations. But now it's becoming impossible to miss the changes from year to year. It's moving incredibly fast.
Buchegger, who's 58, has been exploring mountains and glaciers since his childhood. He remembers well how things used to look.
When I was around 12 years old, I trained for the first time on the Kitzstein Horn, and the Mara Glacier on the right flank was a solid wall of ice and snow. Today, that's given way to a huge boulder as tall as a 6-story house. And that's just within the last few decades. It's hard to imagine.
Over the last 120 years, the air temperature in the region has increased by about 2 degrees, both in summer and in winter. Mark Olefs, head of climate research at the Central Institute for Meteorology and Geodynamics, says climate change is behind the changes currently being observed.
The glaciers react mainly to the air temperature. Whether there's a summer snowfall or whether there's a 2 or 4 meter layer of snow on the glacier, all that doesn't make much difference when it comes to the long-term changes and loss of mass of the glacier. It's the air temperature.
Although the enormous amounts of snow and the increased avalanche risk have their origins in nature, Olef says climate change is making the situation worse.
That report was by Clemens Ferencotta and narrated by Irene Quayle.
For more DW Radio, check out our magazines Inside Europe, Worldlink, World in Progress, Living Planet, Spectrum and The 77% at dw.com/radio.
Finally on the show today, where in your life do you make more sustainable or environmentally friendly decisions? The grocery store? At home? How about your daily commute? But what about when going out on the weekends? DW's Anne-Sophie Brenlin recently paid a visit to a few of Berlin's clubs. She wanted to find out how they are working to make even our nightlife a little greener.
Could this be the sound of a greener future? In a crowded, sweaty, dark Berlin cellar club, partygoers with their eyes closed and their arms up in the air are moving to the electronic beats the DJ is throwing into the excited crowd. While the clubbers are sipping on their mate vodkas and taking a drag from their cigarettes, laser lights are swirling across their heads. But they're not just any lights, they're LED lights, powered by green energy. That's because more and more clubs in Berlin, like the famous gay club Schwutz, are trying to become more sustainable.
The question of how to be sustainable as a club has been on our minds for a while. We already switched to LED technology, but we believe we can do more. If you look at how much waste we produce as a club, it becomes clear that sustainability is an important issue.
That's Marcel Weber, CEO of Schwutz. He's participating in a new climate project by the German NGO Friends of the Earth Germany and the association Clubliebe e.V. that's designed to help clubs in Berlin become more sustainable. Financed by the Berlin Senate, the project sends experts like Constanze Meyer to clubs to advise them on how they can become more eco-friendly.
We actually go to clubs if they ask us to and have a look around which kind of technology they are using, for example, which kind of lighting or heating or fridges.
She then advises them on measures they can take to become more green, from switching to green energy to reducing their water consumption and managing their trash better, or just avoiding plastics altogether. Maya has scheduled 2 days to inspect the entire Schwutz Club, from sound cables to cooling units, to find ways to decrease the club's carbon footprint. And Schwutz CEO Weber is excited about it.
What would be super cool is if we find a way to digitally control our cooling units so that our fridges don't have to run 24/7 and save electricity that way.
Another idea that has been floating around is building dance floors that produce electricity. Dutch designer Daan Roosgaard invented a sustainable dance floor, which is using floor tiles that harvest the energy of the dancers and then turn it into electricity. The invention is already in use in a club in Rotterdam and could now become a reality in Berlin as well.
We want to bring that spirit and these kind of good examples to Germany too.
The problem is that technology like that is really expensive and most Berlin clubs only have short rental agreements, so big investments like that might not be worth it.
So they have really short perspectives and that keeps them from doing bigger investments in, for example, energy-efficient technology.
Now politicians like Georg Kössler, Green Party representative for climate protection and club culture in Berlin, want to change that.
We have made available a multi-million dollar fund for climate protection in general within the city, and there's still a lot of money left. So if whoever has a good idea has to come forward. We even have a call for clubs. If you have an innovative project to save energy or to make your club green, you can apply for funds.
According to estimations by Friends of the Earth Germany, one club emits around 30 tons of CO2 per year. A club also uses as much electricity over the course of a single weekend as one household does over an entire year. But encouraging clubs to become more sustainable is not just about CO2 emissions. There's an even bigger picture.
I think Berlin clubs are trendsetters, not just in terms of music, that's obvious, but also in terms of lifestyle. And when people see, oh, they don't use plastic straws anymore, maybe they start thinking more about it. So yes, that's actually why we as politicians focus on clubs now, because they're such big trendsetters. Thousands of people in Berlin go to clubs. Thousands of people are coming to Berlin for the clubs. We can really reach a lot of people by working with the clubs and making the clubs greener.
And it's not just about reaching people. It's about tapping into Berlin's creative spirit to come up with new ideas how to be more green.
The creative potential that is in the scene, it can lead to really good new ideas to tackle environmental issues.
And it turns out, clubbers are actually open for it. Maya interviewed clubgoers in Berlin for a study and found out that more than 90% of the respondents wished clubs were more sustainable. More than 80% said they would be willing to support clubs by taking action themselves. Maya believes Berlin's clubbing scene has the potential to make big changes in society and start environmental movements and campaigns.
The clubbing scene has always been kind of a nucleus where a lot of social movements came from. Thinking about Love Parade, at least in the beginning, they really had political messages, which then affected the whole society.
For politician Kössler, it's time for Berlin clubs to use their potential to fight against climate change.
Most Berlin clubs rather take on their social responsibility.
For example, by organizing initiatives for a more open society, by standing up for LGBTQ rights and speaking out against racism and xenophobia.
And I really think that's a good thing, but we want to broaden their focus to environmental factors as well.
That way, he believes Berlin's clubs can serve as a role model for cities across the world.
I hope that other cities will look towards Berlin and say, okay, that's a good idea. We want to make our clubs as green, and we take public money to make those clubs green because this really has an outreach.
Weber vom Schwurz agrees that Berlin is the perfect starting point for that.
Also ich glaube, Berlin hat den großen Vorteil, dass wir einfach diese Freiheit auch in den Köpfen haben.
Berlin has the huge advantage that we have the freedom in our heads to think of new ways how to tackle issues differently. And often enough, that has inspired others to follow our lead.
Davon inspiriert fühlen, das auch zu übernehmen.
For DW, this is Anna-Sophie Brentlin in Berlin.
That's it for us today on Living Planet. If you like this show, please give us a rating on iTunes, tell a friend about Living Planet, or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Have a question you'd like us to address on the show? Send an email or voice memo to livingplanet@dw.com. We'd especially love to hear from those of you younger listeners who are participating in the Fridays for Future movement. Again, you can send a voice memo or email to livingplanet@dw.com or reach out on our Facebook page, DW Environment, and on Twitter at DW_environment.
Yellow diamonds in the light, and we're standing side by side as a shadow crosses mine. What it takes to come alive.
Our studio manager this week was Ileana Gilarducci. Jürgen Kuhn was our studio technician. Irene Quayle and Ruby Russell helped with production. And I'm Sam Baker. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more environment stories from around the globe.